Good afternoon. I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. We do have a quorum present. Representative Finke, have you had a chance to take a look at the minutes?
I have reviewed the minutes, and I move their adoption.
Representative Finke moves the minutes for April 14, 2026. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. We're going to go first to House File 4211, Representative Vernig. This is a bill that's going to be laid over, so I move House File 4211 before the committee. And we have a DE3 amendment to the bill in the form that the author wants. All those in favor of the DE3 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and the D3 amendment is adopted. Representative Vernig, to your bill.
Yes, thank you, Chair Fisher and Chair Heintzman and members of the committee. Before you is House File 4211 as amended, a bill brought forth by the Egan Neighbors for Clean Air. Last year, Gopher Resource exceeded the standard for lead air emissions. They worked to remediate the leak, and by the time the community was notified, it was too late to get useful blood level testing done. After multiple meetings with various agencies, local partners, and impacted community members, this pilot arose as one way to better deal with real-time data. The bill appropriates funding for a pilot program for continuous lead air monitoring system to a community that meets the criteria. One, being wholly or partially within an environmental justice area, and two, within 2 miles of a facility that has exceeded emission limits for lead multiple times. If the MPCA determines that the installation will not be effective, the balance of the appropriation will go back to the general fund. I appreciate the technical expertise of the agency and House staff, and there may be a little work to be done yet with the language. With me, I have two testifiers, and we'll hand it over to them. Thank you,
Representative Vernig. First, I have Mike Supina, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
If you'd like to introduce yourself, who you're with, and begin your testimony. We're trying to keep testimony to about 2 minutes.
Absolutely. Thank you. So, chairs, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Mike Supina. I'm a council member with the City of Egan. I'm here on behalf of the City of Egan and our residents regarding lead exceedances at Gopher Resources and the concerns it has raised in our community. Many of our residents have lived in this area for years and are concerned about cumulative exposure and long-term health risks. Equally concerning is the delay in communication from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The City of Egan was not notified of the exceedance in a timely manner, and as a result, neither were our residents. This has created significant frustration and eroded trust. Looking ahead, there is clear alignment that additional real-time monitoring in this area would be beneficial. Better data would help address uncertainty, provide transparency, and support informed decision-making. However, the City of Egan does not have the resources, technical know-how, or regulatory authority to implement or operate a lead monitoring system. Pollution control and environmental monitoring are specialized functions that belong at the state level. The city stands ready to partner, support communication, and help engage our community, but we cannot take on responsibilities that exceed our expertise and funding capacity. In closing, our request is timely communication, stronger transparency, and appropriate state-level investment in monitoring and oversight to protect public health. Thank you for your time and consideration.
You're welcome. Thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Mark Creedler. Welcome to the committee. Please
Mark
introduce
Kreidler.
Yourself and begin your testimony.
All right, thanks. My name is Mark Creedler. I live in Egan with my wife and my 10-year-old son. We live a quarter of a mile away from Gopher Resource. Gopher Resource is the only lead battery recycling plant we have in Minnesota. According to their website, they have capacity to recycle 50,000 lead car batteries a day and 15 million a year. I acknowledge that recycling batteries is an important capability for the state to have. However, the issue is this facility is located immediately next to neighborhoods. As a part of the recycling process, Gopher Resource emits lead into the air. In 2025, between January and March, they exceeded the MPCA and EPA thresholds for levels of lead in the air. However, people in the neighborhood were not notified until July. We were exposed to illegal levels of lead in the air over a 3-month period, and we weren't notified about that until 6 months after it started. and therein lies the problem and the reason I'm here before this committee today. Knowing we were exposed to elevated levels of lead 6 months after the fact doesn't help us. We need real-time notifications when levels are elevated so we can take precautionary steps to protect ourselves and our family. Continuous air monitoring, which is being asked for in this bill, will give us real-time information about lead levels. We've worked extensively with the City of Eagan, with Dakota County, with Bianca here, with the MPCA and the MDH to understand this problem and come up with some real solutions to protect ourselves. That's why I'm here before this committee representing a large group, the Eagan Neighbors for Clean Air, of almost 300 concerned residents of Eagan, that is asking that you please move this bill forward so that we have the basic tools and information we need to protect ourselves and our families. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kredler. Next, I have Tom Johnson from the MPCA. Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead and introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, Tom Johnson. I serve as Director of Government Relations and External Affairs for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Really want to thank Representative Vernig, who has been great to work with on this. I think the agency, this is a really complicated space and a challenge, a very legitimate challenge that the agency is experiencing and I know the communities are experiencing. So it's definitely a worthy area for the legislature to be making some policy. We do, as the representative, as the author mentioned, we do still have a couple challenges with the language as drafted here, but you know, it's been there's been a couple iterations, and this is again a really complex space. So the only thing I really want to make sure the committee has for the record is these types of continuous monitoring systems. They are not able to determine compliance with the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. So EPA has the sole authority and ability to determine which types of monitors can determine compliance. So as we have envisioned this, and as I think you heard from one of the testifiers, the idea of this is to have a monitor for the community's benefit so they can see real-time data for their own, to make their own decisions. The agency's regulatory monitors that can determine compliance, they sample the air, it goes to a lab, it has to be QA QC'd, it goes through a whole process to make sure that it is verifiable and can be used for enforcement if necessary. So while this could be an important tool for community members, it cannot be used for compliance. So that's just one of the challenges that the agency still has, but happy to continue working on this. As I said, I completely understand. I think the agency understands that it can take months to get results back. The standard is determined over a three-month period. So even if there is an exceedance of the standard one day, it takes 3 months of exceeding that standard to constitute a violation. So it is a challenging space where the community wants to know what's in the air and completely understand that. But we also need to be consistent with state and federal law. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Appreciate that. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? Members, any questions? Chair Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If PCA could come back. Sorry about that.
Go ahead, Chair Heintzman.
Sure. I think I heard this information, but I just want to make sure that I understand clearly. So is there already an air monitor? I'm assuming because we're asking for more data at a more frequent rate or in a more timely way. Is there one air monitor, several? What do we have in that vicinity? Yeah.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative Heintzen, we have a regulatory ambient air quality monitor located directly across the street from the facility, from Gopher Resource. And that, again, is placed in an area where we have determined via our meteorologists and air modeling have determined where the prevailing wind is. So that's where we try to capture the bulk of the emissions coming from the facility to determine if they're in violation of the ambient air quality standards.
Chair Heintzeman.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's directly in the vicinity, and it's downwind. And again, just want to confirm that I understand this correctly. Air samples are being taken on what basis or how frequently? Is it daily or every 3 days? I think I heard every 3 days.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, it is, I believe, every few days. I'll have to get back with specificity, but the important part is that we need to see the exceedance happen over the course of 3 months. It's an average standard, or we need to see that exceedance happen 3 months in a row for it to constitute a violation of the standard.
Chair Heintzeman.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I really am very sympathetic to the concerns of those folks in Eagan. Thank you, Councilman, for being here today. It does sound like there's quite a process to get that information through testing, and I'm not sure how that could be expedited, if it's this bill or if it's another way, or if there's something that PCA could be doing to accelerate that process. Maybe if that could be clarified too, if there is something that can be done without legislation, I'd be interested to know. Of course, we are here at the end and so on. So I think that probably be good information on the record for the residents of that area.
I appreciate it. Mr. Yeah. Johnson, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And Chair Heintzeman, we do have a mobile air monitoring trailer that the legislature invested in. Thank you all for that. That has just gotten up and running. We built it from scratch. It has both metals monitors and particulate matter and all the latest stuff in it. It is parked outside Gopher Resource right now, or in the community. It can't be there forever. The whole idea is that it goes to different communities. So, you know, while that is serving the purpose now, our intent is to get it to all sorts of communities across Minnesota over time. So I think one of the asks of the community, while I think they like having the trailer there right now, is that there be sort of a permanent solution that does the same type of thing.
Okay, thank you. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question, of course, is for Mr. Johnson. Nice. I'm wondering, you know, we have, the MPCA has environmental justice maps that prioritize where air quality monitoring and investment should go, along with cumulative impacts. Is this area part of any of those existing overlay maps, or where, how does it fit into that existing work that the MPCA is doing to monitor air quality control for communities of concern?
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Jordan, I do not believe that this area specifically is considered an environmental justice area. I would have to double check the maps, but those are publicly available on our website for anybody to look at. We have been focusing our efforts in environmental justice areas with the additional FTEs that the legislature gave us in 2024. So those are additive to the permitting and enforcement staff that we already had, and those folks are prioritized towards environmental justice areas. So they have been doing their work, renewing permits in environmental justice areas, doing more inspections, and generally doing more additional work of the agency that we're doing across the state, but those people are focused on those environmental justice areas. So that is happening.
Representative Jordan?
No, that's a good update, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Not seeing any other questions from members. Representative Bernig, final comments.
Yes, thank you, Chair Fisher and Chair Heintzeman and members of the committee for your time and consideration. The intent of the bill is for a pilot program to try new technology to monitor lead emissions and provide communities, especially those experiencing disproportionate air pollution, more up-to-date information in order to better make health decisions. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. With that, I renew my House file. That House file 4211 as amended be laid over. The bill is laid over as amended. Thank you. Next on the agenda, we will be going to the LCCMR bill, which is House file 3426. We are going to be going through a number of motions here. I want to say thank you to Co-Chair Heintzman. Chair Heintzman and myself spent a lot of time working with Sydney Representative Jordan, and I believe we've got things pretty well worked out so that we can get things moving forward here today. Representative Jordan, would you like to move House File 3426 as amended be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee?
Mr. Chair, do I need to make a motion to bring it off the table first?
Yes, this is the motion to get it off the table.
Great. So moved.
Oh, we don't have. Okay, we're just bringing the bill back up. Okay. So as the bill the bill was previously amended. For members of and the public, the A-10 and A-11 bill that were adopted by the committee on March 17th. So at this time we don't have a committee engrossment at this point in time. So I wanted to reference that we are moving forward with further action by the committee. Before we begin, I will say that there's a couple of technical things that we're going to be doing here. And first, what we need to do is we need to reconsider the A-11 amendment. There's a section of the A-11 amendment that will conflict with one of our new amendments that we're going to be doing. So what we're going to do is take up the move to reconsider the A-11 amendment. So with that, I move to reconsider the A-11 amendment. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The A-11 amendment is back before the committee. Please be patient as I go through this because this is not something we typically do, so it's a little bit of work here. I will now move the A-16 amendment. This amendment deletes Section 3 of the A-11 amendment. This is the amendment that relates to the surety bonds, and the surety bonds is being modified and going into the new amendment that we've got coming up before us. But first, we need to delete it here. So is there any questions from anybody? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The A-16 amendment is adopted. I will now move the A-11 amendment as amended. So that will go back on, and this is for the appropriation for the community grants. Any questions? All those in favor of putting the A11 amendment as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The A11 amendment is adopted as amended. Next, I will move the A-18 amendment. This amendment reflects the agreement between Co-Chair Heintzman and myself. It sets caps related to the community grant program and provides various language as recommended by the legislative auditor to put guardrails on the program. When we had the auditor before us, when we were originally hearing information, she had mentioned that it would be good to have more things in statute, and she made some recommendations. And that's what this amendment does, is incorporates it all together. I want to say thank you to Chair Heintzman with working with me diligently on that. So we have the amendment before us, and I see a question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to ask the author of the bill her intent on with this amendment. I'm looking at the 1.5 to 1.10 and looking at the original or the existing statute on this. It has a variety of criteria that encourage that these grants are to go to underserved communities, people who haven't normally benefited from projects from the Environmental Trust Fund. On 1.7 and 1.8, as the author, is it your intent that those grants be somewhat exclusive? That, for example, could an entity who apply for a grant for 1 mile of trail and then apply another grant for 2 miles of trail and 3 miles, all in the existing year, so that they would be stacking the grant applications in one time. Could one entity stack applications and therefore use up all of the grants as the author?
Representative Jordan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, the way my intent with this bill is that $2 million is the cap for trail maintenance. The $750 cap can only be used for purpose other than trail maintenance, so that stacking could not occur, so that someone could not accrue $2,750,000 for trail maintenance, as an example.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author, could an entity apply for two $2 million grants if they're the same entity?
Representative Jordan.
I think that, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that would, if I don't think you could apply for two grants totaling $2 million. That would be a grant for $4 million.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my reason for asking this is exactly to that point, that if you have an entity that applies for, they've got a section of trail, and they apply for multiple grants, that entity is applying for several grants, and the cap is for one grant, and that is for that entity. Would that be correct?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen. So if I'm understanding it, if the Friends of the Sydney Jordan Wilderness Area are applying for a trail grant, they couldn't apply for a $2 million trail grant to the, one aspect of the trail, and then another $2 million grant for another aspect of the trail. That would be exceeding the cap for the Sydney Friends of the Sydney Jordan Wilderness Area.
Representative Hansen. Okay. Any other questions? Representative Jordan, to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, I would appreciate if you would adopt the amendment. I think it is a good compromise. Trails are important to all of us. Obviously, they're important to me. And I think it's also important that we're establishing these grants for other aspects to serve our community. So I would hope you would adopt the A18 amendment.
Okay. Not seeing any others, I will renew my motion to adopt the A18 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails and the A18 amendment is adopted. Next, we will go to the A14 amendment. Chair Heintzman, would you like to move the A14 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, and I have a couple of comments.
Go right
just
ahead.
Just explaining the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, members, this amendment deletes a project on page 19. Cultivating conservation leaders through education and wilderness experiences. The reason I'm offering the amendment isn't because I'm against a title such as that. I think that there are some really tremendous examples going back decades where that has been supported continuously. The problem, unfortunately, and there's a letter in your packet if anyone wants to look at it, it's a Friends of the Boundary Waters notes letter. They used the LCCMR logo in a social media post advocating for attendance to an event. And without belaboring it, this is something that cannot be done. And that's something that we could have a longer conversation about. But I think that addressing the issue in this way is the appropriate step to take to avoid those kinds of things in the future. And I want to thank everyone for their input on this and trying to figure out how we can continue forward in spite of those kinds of things. And I'll leave it there, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. Discussion from the members. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I oppose the A14 amendment. As this letter references, this was an honest mistake by the Friends of the Boundary Waters. And they have adjusted their practices accordingly. the people who are hurt by this amendment are not necessarily the Friends of the Boundary Waters. This is the children that they are being served by their wilderness trips. So the Friends of the Boundary Waters, in their project proposal, plans to increase access to the BWCAW for 12,000 kids and even have over 600 kids go on direct overnight excursions into the wilderness. As a Boundary Waters user myself and real fan of this, what I would think of as Minnesota's crown jewel, I think it's important that we continue to increase access to it. 12 out of 17 members of the LCCMR picked this project to hear, and it was advanced to receive funding. I think that we can talk about the LCCMR logo is important and should not be used for anything outside of the very explicit uses of this logo. I would hope that this this very public scolding is a pretty clear indication that we shouldn't be using this. So rather than take away these wilderness experiences from children who do not have other access to the Boundary Waters wilderness, I don't think we should take away that access. So I would ask members to oppose this amendment.
Other comments? I will say that I hear you, Representative Jordan. It is harsh. At the same time, we're very concerned to make sure that the LCCMR logo is being properly used. I would encourage people to continue discussions on this issue as we go forward. Any further comments? With that, all in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion prevails and the A14 amendment is adopted. Moving on, any further discussion on the bill? Representative Jordan, any closing comments?
Members, I feel like I've made closing comments on this bill a few times. So I know this is probably the fullest I've seen this committee room, and I think that's just really shows to the testament of how much Minnesotans love the LCCMR program and all the projects funded by the ENRTF. I'll remind you that just last year, voters in every corner of the state overwhelmingly voted to renew this program. When I talk to legislators in other states, they talk about how envious they are of Minnesota because of not only just our incredible public lands and resources, but also the way we steward them. And this is one of the best ways that you can steward those public lands. There's a project in each and every one of your districts, and there's a project for each and every one of your interests, whether it's renewable energy, whether it's birds, insects, camp opportunities for kids. There's a project in here that you can really champion and love, and it might be in your district, but it might be in a completely opposite part of the state, but they're all worthy of funding. And I really want to thank the LCCMR staff and every member of the LCCMR. Sitting around the table, we have Chair Fisher and Chair Heintzman, who spent many, many, many hours in what were some very difficult times this summer. You know, the first meeting I had after Melissa Hortman was murdered was LCCMR. Mm-hmm. Melissa Hortman appointed me to the LCCMR after years of me begging to be on this committee. And she finally relented. And I'm really proud of the work and I'm proud of the committee for their commitment to Minnesota's natural resources. And I'm hoping that we can move this on to the next step. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Jordan renews her motion that House File 3426, as amended, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee and direct nonpartisan staff to make any technical corrections to conform with the action and intent of the committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Motion prevails, and you're off to Ways and Means. Thank you. Our remaining bills that we have today are all being laid over. Next bill I have on the agenda is House File 3793, Representative Purcell, large water users. 3793. House File 3793 received a full hearing with testimony on March 10th, 2026, and was discussed and amended at that point in time. So no further testimony is going to be taken today on the bill. However, we do have some amendments that, as Vice Chair
Purcell's continued working on the bill. She's got some amendments that she's bringing forward, and that's what we're going to be dealing with today. Vice Chair Purcell, would you like to move your bill before us?
So moved.
Vice Chair Purcell, I believe you have an author's amendment. Would you like to move the DE5 and explain it to us, please?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the author's delete everything amendment is before you. It is number 5. The two main things that this does. One, it addresses the concerns that the League of Minnesota Cities had around these municipal water permits. We worked with them, and they are good with this language. There might be, you know, some little tweaks here or there, but I believe that we have allayed their main fears around this. And the second thing we did is amended Representative Schultz's House File 4019 regarding the farm and the Mount Simon Hinckley Aquifer onto this bill.
Okay, very good. Vice Chair Purcell moves the DE5 amendment to get the bill in the form the author wants. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The DE5 amendment is adopted. And at this point, any further comments, Vice Chair Purcell, on your amendment? Otherwise, we'll go to questions from the members.
Nothing further.
Members, any questions? Sheriff Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'll just start by saying that I think it's good that the concerns of cities have been addressed. That's progress, and I think we can all agree that we're heading in the right direction. While most these days we talk about data centers, this bill has an impact on agricultural and other industrial applications too. I'm not totally sure. I'm not convinced yet that the bill is necessary. The statutes passed last session in the data center bill, members might remember, direct the DNR and the commissioner to require applications to conduct aquifer tests to protect public health, safety, welfare, et cetera. So I just want to make sure that, for the record, I mention the concerns that we still have relative to redundancy and such. But as I said earlier when I finished, I'll leave it there.
Okay. Any further? First of all, go to Vice Chair Purcell and then Representative Schultz.
Great. Thank you, Chair Fisher. Thank you, Chair Heintzman, for the comments. And I will just clarify, this only applies to industrial or commercial uses, not agriculture.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell. Appreciate the progress, just like Representative Heintzman mentioned, and realize that that there still are 30 plus days left in session. And so, like was mentioned, given agreement of the legislature, a bipartisan agreement from last session with regards to a lot of these changes in water law, I think an ongoing dialogue is needed on a number of these factors. I'm appreciative that you have included provisions that I have brought forward this session. And at the same time, since you've done so, I have heard from additional folks who have interests, I would say multiple different interests in your legislation. And so additional conversations are needed between you and I and other stakeholders around the table and those members of the public impacted by the remaining portions of your bill.
Any other comments? Representative Vice Chair Purcell, any closing comments?
I just want to thank the committee. Hopefully, I mean, this is our last hearing, right? So three times a charm. You don't have to hear about this bill again. I appreciate the dialogue, Representative Schultz, and thank you all.
Vice Chair Purcell renews her motion that House File 3793 as amended be laid over. The bill is laid over. Next, we have House File 4819. Representative Keselowski. Representative Keselowski, welcome to the committee. It's nice to have you back again. Seeing you're not on the committee, I will move House File 4819 before the committee. Representative Keselowski, to your bill.
Great. Thank you, Chair and members, for having me back this time to present House File 4819. As you may recall, back in 2024, this legislature passed a bipartisan bill that I led into passage, which was the creation of the Critical Minerals Recovery Advisory Task Force, because we all recognize something really simple but urgent, and that is that if Minnesota wants to lead the clean energy and circular economy, then we can't just talk about the materials of the future. We need to build a strategy to actually recover and reuse those. Minerals like lithium, cobalt, nickel, copper, aluminum, silicone, as we know, really power our modern life, everything from electric vehicles and batteries to wind turbines, solar panels, and medical technologies. But today, the U.S. is really heavily dependent on foreign supply chains for these really important materials. Lithium from Australia and Chile, and cobalt, which is largely sourced from the Democratic Republic of Congo, which I'll note that our labor unions remind us is oftentimes unethical standards. At the same time, we're throwing opportunity away and leaving it literally on the table, burning it, shipping it out of state and overseas for processing. In Minnesota, 4.5% of what is in the landfill is metal, and another 1.2% is e-waste. And only about 23% of that e-waste is actually collected, and 90% of it is shredded and shipped overseas for final processing. And that means we're exporting jobs, our labor standards, economic value, our climate responsibility, and supply chains along with it. So the task force really brought together labor, industry, our tribal nations, environmental leaders, and more to really determine how we deliver that circular economy. And what they've found, and I would encourage everybody, if you haven't read the 119 pages of the Critical Minerals Task Force report sent to us back in December, this is chock full of recommendations and that vision, which says the next step is really that we need the data. We need data to understand what materials exist in the waste stream, how we are recovering that, and what infrastructure is needed to keep that value right here in Minnesota. So taking that next step is what we're before you to fund this study. Research shows that even 1% increase in recovering these materials from our existing waste streams would help us significantly reduce our reliance on those foreign imports, but also make good paying jobs, take care of our climate future, and move us to that circular economy. So without any further ado, in getting into how we make a Minnesota-specific strategy, I'd like to invite up my first testifier.
Certainly. Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. First testifier is Ryan Gilbertson. If you'd like to come forward. We're looking for folks to keep the testimony to about 2 minutes. Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead and introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Chair Fisher, Co-Chair Heintzman, and members of the committee, my name is Ryan Gilbertson, and I am the Minnesota Policy Organizer for the Blue-Green Alliance, a coalition of labor unions and environmental organizations. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in favor of HF 4819, a bill to fund a study on critical materials in our economy and in our waste stream. The world's dependence on critical materials is not going to go away. They are essential components in advanced manufacturing, clean energy technologies, and even defense applications. These materials could be backbones to new industries powering Minnesota's economic future, starting with the recycling industry itself. Unfortunately, we are highly dependent on fragile and often foreign-controlled supply chains for many of these materials. House File 4819 recognizes that Minnesota has untapped opportunities to improve supply chain resilience by better understanding how critical materials already flow through our economy and how many of them are currently being lost to landfills instead of being reused, recycled, and recovered. We strongly support House File 4819 as we believe it is a critical next step in creating a large-scale critical material recycling, recovery, and processing industry in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, I have J.T. Haynes. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for taking the time to be here. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Hi, I'm Ben Olson, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, in for J.T. Haynes. We support House File 4819. My comments will be brief, but I first want to thank Representative Kozlowski and IGO for coming together on this to author this important bill. It's always encouraging to see bipartisan collaboration. The average American household has 80 items of e-waste lying around, and according to the MPCA, of the 266 million pounds of e-waste produced in Minnesota annually, only about 24% gets collected and recycled. That means about 2 billion worth of metals going into landfills and incinerators every year. Fully capturing this waste stream would mean enough copper for 155,000 electric vehicles. We recognize the difficult to recycle nature of many products containing critical minerals and the high costs that go into making sure their most valuable components can be extracted and reused. One suggestion to strengthen the study would be to consider adding a section to evaluate which products might be able to be redesigned most easily to maximize their recyclability or identify entities in the private sector that are already innovating and doing this well. Thank you, Representative Kozlowski, for bringing forward this bill. MCAA supports it, and we encourage the committee to work together to pass it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Kyle. Mark Carrios, thank you. Sorry. I struggle every now and then. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and Chair Heinzman, committee members. My name is Kyle Makarios. I'm here on behalf of Mining Minnesota. Mining Minnesota is the trade association for companies exploring and developing plans to mine the critical minerals and create a domestic supply chain for the products we use every day. That supply chain can and must be circular. We recognize that the time, energy, and resources that are required to mine these minerals are significant, and once we get these minerals out of the ground, they should never go back in. Making the transition to cleaner energy requires making a transition from a fossil fuels-intensive economy to a minerals-intensive economy, and it will take substantial new mining of critical minerals as well as recycling to meet the demand. While our board of directors hasn't had time to formally evaluate the specific points of study in this bill, we are largely supportive of the direction that this is going, and we look forward to working with Representative Kozlowski and the advocates on this project moving forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none. Members, questions? Representative Warwaz.
Rookie mistake there. I want to thank Representative Kozlowski for bringing this bill, which I've also signed on to alongside Representative Igo. I think responsibly recycling and also figuring out how we can domestically reprocess these minerals is a really important thing. As Representative mentioned, we have a lot of these things taking place overseas with no environmental controls. You know, we don't have our labor standards are not honored in those places as well. And so I think that this is a great start to being able to get further and further away from that. As noted, we are too dependent on those foreign sources and fragile supply chains. I would also note that we can't recycle our way into the future, though it's a great start. And many of our local trades, as stated by Mr. Makarios, support harvesting critical minerals here in Minnesota. And as a career miner myself, in his 30th year next week, I would say that it is also noted that it's a national security issue that we're able to do these things. So I just want to say we want to support domestic recycling and domestic mining. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Other comments, questions? Hearing none. Representative Kozlowski, any further comments, closing comments?
All right. Well, thank you, Chair and members, for love it in and out hearing. But this bill is being laid over, and we just ask for your support and consideration and building out the infrastructure and really getting to the meat of the data of how we create the roadmap to our circular economy. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. And I will renew my motion that House File 4819 be laid over. The bill is laid over. With that, we are on to our final bill for the day. This will be House File 3466, a Representative Vang bill. I will move House File 3466 before the committee. Representative Vang, I believe you have an author's amendment, and I will move the DE1 author's amendment. Would you please explain the amendment briefly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The DE1 does more clarification and more technical changes, so just to put it in the shape that I would like it to be in.
Okay, I will move the DE1. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. The DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Bang, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3466, as amended, focuses on how to minimize impacts of the Minnesota River Basin, a prized state resource that has major problems with flooding, bank erosion, and nutrient pollution. This bill creates a mandatory EAW category for public drainage projects on public drainage systems in the Minnesota River Basin with a total drainage area of 5 square miles or larger. This requirement would also apply to drainage projects statewide that drain to our highest value water bodies, such as trout streams, game lakes, and other outstanding water resources throughout the state. The bill language is targeted to apply to the small portion of all statewide drainage projects that have the most potential for significant environmental impacts, which is the purpose of our environmental review thresholds. It is important for the state and for Minnesotans to have access to this critical information, which will help promote practices that can mitigate the harmful environmental impacts that can result from drainage system expansion. In conclusion, this bill seeks to balance the well-established crop productivity benefits of agriculture drainage with environmental outcomes and the interests of downstream communities who are too often left to deal with increased flooding, sediment, and nutrient pollution that can be traced to upstream drainage on their own. It makes sense for the state to limit this provision to large-scale public infrastructure projects with drainage areas of five square miles or more, and to focus on the most at-risk areas of the state like the Minnesota River Basin. And with that, Mr. Chair, I may have a testifier, or I'm ready to answer for any questions.
Why don't we go to testifiers first? I do have a number of testifiers here. To let the committee know for our remaining time, we've got about an hour left. What I'm hoping to do is wrap things up on the bill by no later than 22. That would leave about 5 minutes, seeing this is our last meeting, to be able to do thank yous and recognitions at that point in time. So for the testifiers, we recommend 2 minutes limit for testifying. The first person I have is Carly Griffith. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for taking the time to be here. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and members of the committee. My name is Carly Griffith, and I am the Water Program Director at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 3466. We didn't know if it would come before the committee this session, so we appreciate the opportunity. This is an important bill that would require an environmental assessment worksheet for improvements on or new constructions of public drainage systems with a total drainage area of 5 square miles or larger. First, I would like to respond to some of the concerns raised in opposition letters submitted to the committee, which misconstrue the plain language of the bill. First, this is not a one-size-fits-all approach. Instead, it uses environmental review thresholds as they are intended to limit the provision to the projects with the greatest potential for a significant environmental impact, namely those in vulnerable areas like the Minnesota River Basin, and also those that impact high-quality water resources. Second, this bill does not capture drainage repairs or maintenance of systems to maintain their legally established capacity. That's because it uses the term drainage project as it is defined in 103E, which explicitly excludes drainage repairs and maintenance. The third misconception that I'd like to address is that this is not itself a change to 103E, which is the state's drainage code and expected to go through the stakeholder process in the drainage work group. It instead is a directive to the Environmental Quality Board to amend the rules that implement our environmental review laws in Minnesota. I think we can all agree that agricultural drainage is important for crop production in southern Minnesota. However, it is also a major driver of significantly increased flows in rivers and streams and the accelerated erosion of stream banks and bluffs. This can threaten property, infrastructure and habitat, and loads our rivers with nutrients and suspended solids. Increased environmental review over drainage improvements and new projects on the Minnesota River Basin's largest systems would allow the state and the public to better understand and mitigate these impacts before projects move forward. We support the geographic limitation of this requirement to the Minnesota River Basin because we think there's a lack of basin-wide governance in this region to ensure equitable outcomes for downstream and upstream communities. I urge the committee to consider the health of both these upstream and downstream communities and to support the bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Jacob Rishmiller. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for taking the time to be here. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jacob Rishmiller. I'm a licensed civil engineer with Moore Engineering. Moore Engineering is a private consulting firm that assists watershed districts, counties, cities, and other public entities to develop public infrastructure projects. I have mostly worked on public drainage systems in the Minnesota River Valley, while other colleagues in my firm have worked in the Red River Basin. So we at Moore have a vast knowledge of how drainage functions within the state of Minnesota. I appreciate the intent behind this proposal and the shared goal of protecting Minnesota water resources. I am here today to testify in opposition of this proposal as it adds unnecessary burden and costs without clear benefits to the public and our water resources. The proposal adds more regulation and to an already heavy regulated statute, which benefits two parties, engineers and attorneys. The environmental assessment worksheet is already woven within the Minnesota Statute 103E process that practitioners are currently using. Therefore, this proposal creates confusion and adds complexity to an already difficult and complex process. The ramifications of the proposal are increasing costs to taxpayers, requiring additional staff time for state and local agencies, and extending project development timelines. All drainage projects require hiring a professional engineer to assess the system and development of the project. A part of our development process, the engineer must consider 9 criteria within Minnesota Statute 103E.015. These criteria are a cost-benefit analysis, alternative analysis, land use analysis, flood impact analysis, wetland impact analysis, water quality analysis, natural resources analysis, groundwater impact analysis, and an overall environmental impact analysis. Therefore, it is difficult to see how additional regulation in the form of a mandatory EAW would add value to a drainage development process and environmental assessment. In closing, Minnesota drainage process already requires a thorough science-based evaluation of environmental impacts with opportunities for agency review and public input. The proposal layers an additional requirement onto the existing framework without clearly improving environmental considerations that are already being made. For this reason and reasons I already mentioned, I respectfully urge the committee not to advance this proposal.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Wesley Beck is going to be on Zoom here. Oh, excuse me. I missed somebody. Steve Schmidt. Steve Schmidt is next. Welcome to the committee, sir. Thank you for being here. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Fisher, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Steve Schmidt, Meeker County Commissioner and Secretary Treasurer of the Minnesota Association of Counties. Counties play a central role in Minnesota's drainage system. In many cases, we serve as the drainage authority responsible for administrating and maintaining these systems under Chapter 103E. These projects are essential for managing water on our landscape, supporting agriculture, and reducing flood risk in our communities. AMC supports the goal of protecting Minnesota's water resources. However, counties have a significant concerns with House File 3466. This bill would expand mandatory environmental review, requiring an environmental access worksheet for certain drainage projects. The challenge is that environmental considerations are already built into the drainage process. Projects require the hiring of a professional engineer or engineering firm to undergo detailed design, analysis, agency coordination, and public hearings before they move forward. From a county perspective, this bill raises 3 key concerns. First, adding a mandatory EAW on top of current requirements creates overlap and inefficiency without clear added benefit. Second, it will increase costs and administrative burden. Preparing an EAW requires additional consultant work and staff time. While some costs may be passed on to landowners, counties are still responsible for managing the process. Third, it will extend project timelines. The added steps in the EAW process can delay projects that already must be managed within a short construction season, delaying benefits to landowners and the public that are often part of these projects. Taken together, counties are asking a fundamental question. What additional environmental benefit does this requirement provide compared to the thorough review that already exists? House File 3466 adds complexity, cost, and delay without clear improvements and outcomes. Members of the committee, with the reasons I bring forward to you today, I respectfully oppose House File 3466. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for your testimony. Now we go to Mr. Wesley Beck, who is on Zoom. Mr. Beck, if you'd like to introduce yourself and begin your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My name is Wesley Beck, and I currently serve as the president of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association, a grassroots association with nearly 7,000 dues-paying farmer members across Minnesota. I farm with my family north of St. James, Minnesota, in Wantowan County. We have a very typical southern Minnesota farm, raising corn, soybeans, and hogs. On behalf of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association, thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 3466 that would require an environmental assessment worksheet on a new or improvement to a drainage system in the Minnesota River Basin, which is where I farm. Minnesota Corn Growers Association is opposed to House File 3466. Subsurface drainage plays an important part, not only in increasing farmers' yield potential, but also conserving Minnesota's soil health and reducing erosion. It also makes all of our inputs more efficient. Subsurface drainage reduces excess of moisture that leads to better root development and less crop stress, no matter the crop. Similar to having a hole in the bottom of your potted plants. Tile lines only begin to remove the water from the soil when the water table increases to the point where the tile line sits at that depth. This allows soil to absorb and store up water to its capacity and then move excess water away below the surface rather than across the top of the field. This reduces surface runoff and erosion. Minnesota farmers are beginning to increase the use of bioreactors and saturated buffers, pattern tiling, and control drainage to better manage water and further reduce nutrient loss. To manage the water and the soil erosion, the NRCS, a division of the USDA, recognizes drainage as a conservation practice with a technical standard. Additionally, drainage complements conservation practices like no-till and cover crops. House Bill 3466 would unnecessarily increase the amount of time that a petition drainage project takes to get from the initial phase to final approval. And in fact, I believe that at this point in time, a drainage authority could request or require an environment in the EAW if they would so choose. An engineer's report on the drainage project often takes several months to evaluate the project, including the environmental impacts and downstream effects. This process and requirements are well documented in the Minnesota Statute 103E and the Public Drainage Manual. Additionally, the process already has several rounds of notices and opportunities for public comments to evaluate and provide feedback on the project. Adding an additional requirement of an EAW feels redundant to a process that is already in place and will add additional time and expense to a project that already often takes years from the petition phase to final approval. That concludes my remarks on House File 3466. Thank you for your time today and the opportunity to testify. If you have any questions for me, I will do my best to answer those.
Thank you for taking the time to be for the committee today. I appreciate your testimony. Next, I have Nathan Collins, who is also on Zoom. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Co-Chair Fisher and Heitzman. My name is Nathan Collins, along with my brother and our families. I am a second-generation farmer from Swift County. On our farm, we grow 9 different crops, organic and non-organic, alfalfa and cover crops. I also serve on the Minnesota Farm Bureau Board of Directors representing West Central Minnesota, and have served on the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Advisory Board for 16 years. I'm here to speak in strong opposition to House File 3466. Farmers care deeply about water quality. We raise our families on the land we live on, and we want to leave it in good shape both now and for the next generation. That commitment shows up in the many management practices we use every day to care for our soil and natural resources. Among the most important of these practices is water management. By maintaining and improving our water infrastructure, we can support healthy crops while also protecting our local water systems. This matters because drainage is not an extra convenience for farmers in West Central Minnesota. It is essential. Proper drainage helps move excess water, protects ground, crop ground, aerates the soil, regulates flow, reduces nutrient movement, and keeps farmers operating. When a drainage repair or improvement gets tied up in additional review and paperwork, the water does not wait. Fields stay wet, planting gets delayed, yields suffer, and farmers and landowners are the ones left paying the price. This bill adds process, but it does not drive better environmental outcomes, and it does not automatically improve water quality. It does not solve a problem by itself. Instead, it creates another hurdle for projects that simply maintain systems farmers and landowners rely on. In my area, it took 20 and 40 years to do drainage upgrades to improve water flow and quality. This bill would impede future drainage in our county. Adding delay and cost to needed drainage work is not a solution. It is just another burden on farmers, counties, and landowners. For these reasons, I respectfully ask you to oppose House File 3466. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be providing testimony, and thank you for your testimony. Next, I have Catherine Neuschler. If you'd like to come forward, please. Thank you for being here. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Catherine Neuschler. I'm the Executive Director of the Environmental Quality Board. Given the limited scope of the good cause exempt rulemaking process and the complexity of this issue, I was concerned with the initial version of the bill that we would not be able to effectively implement this directive if it was made to us by the legislature. The amendment we put on today, assuage those concerns for me. So thank you to the author for that amendment. Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? Please come forward. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself, and we have 2 minutes for you to testify.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Co-Chairman and members of the committee, Representative Vang. My name is John Waller. I live at 14010 Homestead Avenue in Hugo, Minnesota, and I am own a farm there and operate it. But I'm also the manager from Washington County on the Rice Creek Watershed District. This is my 20th year. And while there is an amendment to this bill at the moment that says it's only the Minnesota River Valley, the Rice Creek Watershed District is northern Ramsey County, southern Anoka, and northwestern Washington. It's 180 square miles. It has 28 cities. All of these 28 cities empty their stormwater systems into our ditches, which were the drainage authority for 123 miles. We need to be able to repair these ditches in a timely fashion in order to prevent flooding in the urban areas. Now, I realize that folks don't think about that much, but that's a big problem. Mm-hmm. We had over 60 automobiles underwater a couple of years back from 11-inch rain. If we have to go through the processes of more regulation to work on these ditches, it's going to take longer time to get anything done. And what my fear is here, even though you have an amendment to this bill, is that this becomes a mission creep. You're starting a little bit here, pretty soon you go a little farther, then you go a little farther yet. That's kind of how watershed districts have historically been developed, if you look at the history of them over the last 70 years. So I would ask today that the members of the committee not support this bill, and thank you very much for your help in this matter.
Thank you for your testimony and taking the time to be here today. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like care to testify?
Hearing none, we will go to members. Questions from members? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vang, in your travels of the state, especially visiting family farmers, my question for you is, what farm family suggested this change to you?
Representative Vang.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz. Well, when I was Ag Chair and traveling the state, I think some of the things that we talked about, from various things, from soil health issues to types of crops, talking about weather and climate change. And so there's a lot. But I do know that recently, in the past couple years, I'm sure you heard it from the EPA, has highlighted that Minnesota has not done its job in terms of water quality and nitrate pollutions that we heard in southeast Minnesota. And I've seen a little bit more bipartisan support in making sure that our water is clean and safe. And so I think this is an additional effort to that, addressing the water quality concerns in our state.
Representative Schultz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vang, in what ways does this bill enhance the ability for farmers to farm along the Minnesota River Basin?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, at the state, we do have what's called a nutrient reduction goals, and so far we have not met those, and we're not on track to meeting those. And what that tells me is that we need a more robust process in getting either we know more information about whether how we're going to meet those goals, what tools and information that we need to gather so that we can continue to make sure we're on track, because right now we're not meeting those goals.
Representative Schultz.
One final question, Mr. Chair, and that is, Representative Vang, does your amendment, does your bill, does it have the full support and agreement of the Drainage Work Group?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have not heard directly from them. I think since this year we did not anticipate to have a hearing, I think will be an ongoing conversation. So I'm open to hearing more from stakeholders. As our Carly, our previous testifiers mentioned, this chapter of law does not really directly address that working group. But if they do have comments, I'm open to hearing them.
Mr. Chair, I would just encourage continued consensus building around issues related to drainage. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Vang. Nice to see you in this committee. I guess a quote came to me from a bill I presented last week. I can't remember if it was from Chamber of Commerce or it was a business interest, talked about how this committee, we need to focus on the environmental impacts, not the economics of a particular industry in our state, and water belongs to all of us. And so thank you for bringing a bill that is trying to look at the way we do drainage now is incredibly different than how we did it 100 years ago. So I think it's really important that we continue to look at this. And yes, change is hard, and an EAW will help us to figure out what the challenges are and not necessarily impede or stop these projects. And in fact, if these projects are so environmentally sound, then they will sail through the process. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Vang, for bringing this bill.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Co-Chair Vang. You were the Ag Chair, but now you're the Legacy Chair. And just how much are we spending of the public's money on the Clean Water Fund every year?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the Clean Water Fund, it's about 33% of the legacy amendment. And so I think on average, it's about at least $200 to $300 million a year.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My years might be off here, but I think 10 years ago we had spent $1 billion at that time of public money on the Minnesota River. And since then we're spending tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on clean water of public money. Public money. So again, that's the externalized cost that all of us pay to clean up the mess. All of us pay for that. And so, the practices that were mentioned, and then that's just the state dollars. That's not the federal dollars. That's not if there is a drainage authority that they will levy. They have the ability to levy for practices and projects. So cumulatively, I think it'd be a stunning number to look at how much public money has been spent. And it just seems that all the answers are always, or the comeback is, well, we can't do any. We can't do any regulation. We can't even look at gathering data because then we would stop making money. We wouldn't be able to do what we've been doing. And just, to make sure it's clear, maybe at the next meeting when we have it, I can bring in the tile spade that my dad used to hand tile. The clay tile, and I've still got some clay tile that we dug up. I could bring that in to show that, I know what I'm talking about. All you have to do is go out and look at the pipes, which we want, consider point sources, even though water coming out of the pipe, we don't want to look at that as a point source. It has to be a non-point source. So year after year, we delay any action relating to drainage. We won't even count the drainage. We won't even look at the tile being, I think there's one county or one drainage district that counts the projects, requires reporting. So it continues, and then the cost continues. So we put more tile in, and then we spend more public money trying to hold water on the land, literally letting the water continue to go. So I thank you for doing this. I think, I think even in Legacy, we pay for conservation drainage, something called conservation drainage, a few million dollars each year. Out of that, hundreds of millions. But more and more, these things become considered entitlements, that we must have that public money to make things work. But we don't want to do any regulation. So thank you for having the courage to be here and to take what always comes.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Final, looking around, Chair Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Vang. I quite honestly don't have any more questions. We've heard this bill or versions of it many, many times over the years. And I am going to repeat myself because I feel like our friends in the agriculture community are not being heard. We have had, I think, half a dozen or so testifiers today from the agriculture community. They're saying, and I'm going to paraphrase, here's what I'm hearing. This will very detrimentally affect us. And yet again, here we are with this proposal, which arguably is a solution in search of a problem. In fact, we're only hearing about, from our watershed district testifier, the challenges that we already face getting permits, getting projects done, and this is only going to further complicate that. And I find myself asking, my thoughts are very frustrated. We have so many that just are at a loss trying to understand again and again and again. We have to come back and share our stories and our frustrations. I don't get it. And it's always one side of the table. It becomes very partisan, and we're advocating on this side of the table for farmers and for common sense solutions to these problems, as opposed to what is an extremely complex, very difficult process. And these folks are here time after time after time in the audience preparing to testify to try to protect their family's investment and their lifelong effort to provide the corn that fed the cows that we all enjoyed today, most of us, steak on a stick. Yet here we are again. I think that if we want a preview of what we're going to see in the future, if there's no balance, this is it. Democrats want more regulation, more rules, more answers, again, or more solutions in search of problems. I'm hearing from the other side that the economics apparently don't matter. We're not supposed to focus on the economics. It's unworkable. We have to consider both parts of this to really have a picture of what the impact is. And to say we're just going to not think about or look at that part of the impact, I think, is really reckless. Those in favor of this bill today are extreme environmentalist groups pitted against agriculture. It is incredibly frustrating, and I'm sad that our committee may be no longer meeting. We're going to end on this note because, Chair Fisher, we have done extraordinary work together this session. I think that it is a model for how good government can happen, and I'm glad that we have found a path forward on many controversial things. This bill is not one of those bills that's going to bring us together. It only is more divisive and more frustrating for those of us in greater Minnesota trying to advocate for our constituents and for those that are so negatively affected if this bill became law. So I'm going to hope, I guess, that we continue to have balanced government, because if we don't, we're going to have a really challenging time protecting those people that are working so hard, my goodness, to feed us as they just did today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Heintzman. And I hear the comments you're mentioning, and I will say that as I have looked over the years as what's happening out of the landscape, there are some problems that have changed over the years. First of all, I'll start off with climate change. And what I've seen is the way the water runs off the landscape, the way it did not before, because of the intensity of the storms. About 8 years ago, we were on a tour down through the Minnesota River Valley, and one of the things that we came across was the problems of the intensity of the storms causing more erosion in the hillsides than they had in the past. In one place, we saw a home that was in danger of being washed away. Recently, in the past year, we've seen a dam that's been washed away because of the intensity out there. What I see happening here is we're trying to address the bill, is trying to address some underlying issues that have occurred out there that have gotten worse over time, and trying to figure out other ways to try to get at the problem. Another one that we see out there is the water issue, water quality issue. We've seen the EPA come in and cite the problems that we've got in southwest Minnesota. We've seen over the years there have been several times, and I know that some of us who've been on the committee for a while, we remember this, where we've had fish kills happening in some of the streams, in the trout streams in southwest Minnesota. In some of those areas, the problems seem to be getting worse and not better, even though we're spending lots of money. And it's like what we're trying to do is find another way to try to address some of those underlying things, because we all agree, we all want clean water, and we're not quite getting there. And that's some of the frustration that I'm seeing as we're addressing it. I hear the concerns that people are bringing up from the farming community, at the same time also seeing what the environment and what we're seeing in real action, we're not seeing the improvements we thought we would have seen by now. And so this is an opportunity trying to figure out what are other ways. I know at times we're not always going to have agreement on things, and there's going to be push and back and forth, and this is healthy discussion. We need to have that, and I appreciate being able to hear from all sides as we're dealing with this. This is something that they are complex issues and they take a while. As you can see, this is being laid over. This is something that's not going to be moving forward this year, but it's also a discussion we need to continue to have because we've got these larger outlying issues that we still haven't figured out, and some cases seem to be getting worse. And it's trying to figure out how we can do that to make sure that Minnesotans across the state can rely on having clean water out there and at the same time having a robust agriculture community. I know it can be done, it's just not easy always getting there. And so these are the things where I appreciate the healthy discussion that we've had. And with that, I'll turn it back to Representative Vang for final comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the committee for the discussion. I know that this is probably perhaps a more controversial topic, but I do hope that this is not like a black and white issue or us versus them or one versus the other issue, that it encourages everyone to participate in finding solutions to what we all care about, which is Minnesota resources. And we all know that even farmers, that if we take care of the land takes care of us. And we know that clearly, we're all stewards of the land, stewards of our water, and it's really everyone's responsibility to ensure all of that and for the next generation as well. And so I hope this encourages people to participate in finding solutions rather than discourage and walking out. So thank you, everyone, for your time and the opportunity to have this bill.
Okay, with that, I renew my motion that House File 3466 as amended be laid over. The bill is laid over as amended. We are now at the end of our final regularly scheduled meetings. If there's going to be any further meetings in the future, they would be called by the co-chairs together. I want to say thank you to folks. I want to first of all give Chair Heintzman the opportunity to, I appreciate being able to work with you over the past 2 years. I want to say that, you know, it's good we've had some good, robust discussions. And one of the things I do want to say that I've seen out there is I appreciate people's commitment, making sure that we're staying focused on the issue, not making it personal, but being able to have the tough discussions, as we've just had, is being able to hear from both sides. I think it's important for us to continue to do it and do it in a civil respect. I do want to pass on the committee that one of the things I've heard from many testifiers who've been up here is they feel they have very much appreciated the way that they've been treated by both sides of the table here when they've come here to present, how they've been engaged and how they've been treated, particularly over the past years. I've had people forward that to me. So I want to say thank you to that because you folks don't always get to hear from some of the different people that I do. So I want to pass out on everyone and say thank you for your help and conscientious work and trying to work on the difficult issues that we have before our committee. Chair Heintzman, I'll give you an opportunity to say a few things before I do final thanks here.
Thank you, Chair Fisher, for the opportunity to close out our final meeting in a hopefully better way than maybe some of the discussion previous, but I do echo those sentiments, and I believe that what I said earlier, I'm going to continue to stand by, Chair Fisher. We have we've worked very well together, and we've accomplished some really important things. And there's still work to be done going forward, obviously. We got a lot of bills laid over. We could be talking about the path for some things potentially. And want to make sure that we thank those that have supported us so diligently through that process. I'm going to start with Mr. Hagemeyer, Ms. Taylor. We come to you with ideas and how can we try to put something together and make changes time and time and time and time again. And both of you have been extraordinary in that effort in supporting us. Our nonpartisan staff is critical to this process, and we're very grateful for that. Partisan staff have been also extremely helpful and collaborative in that. Ms. Zipko and Ms. Strohmeyer, you both have been our right hand, I think, on both sides of the table and working together and helping us to keep on track and prepared for each day. It's tremendous. And so many others that have contributed to that on both sides. And it's a real testimony to how, and as I've said earlier in today's committee meeting, that that we can make a path forward, even when many thought, when all of this was announced, that we were going to be in a tie, that this is going to be a disaster, and so on and so forth. I think we proved that wrong. I think that we demonstrated much better than in maybe in the previous tie things might go. And I think we're closing out these 2 years with many, many more positives than negatives. So thank you again to all and those that have kept us safe through our meetings and watched our backs, make sure that everybody has the expectation that they can come here and have, like we had earlier, maybe a little bit of a tough conversation, yet be very civil about it and respectful. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Heintzman. And with that, I also would like to thank our nonpartisan staff. We have Chanel Taylor, Brad Hagemeyer. We also have Bob Beloff that was helping out in City Maxwell. Want to thank our pages, Miria and Henry, our committee administrators, Peter Strohmeyer and Amy Zipko. You folks are very critical. Very much appreciate working with both of you. These folks have got the institutional knowledge on our side there and have really helped guide us as we've gone through the process. Thank you for that. In addition, our committee legislative assistants, Robin Mercer-Taylor and Seilong Yang, thank you for your work in helping make sure we had everything ready that we needed in committee as it came up. Our partisan researchers, Chelsea Ray and Luke Laverne, for making sure that you had our summaries well understood for us. And also special thanks to our security team from the State Patrol, our Capitol Security Sergeants, our Sergeant's Office, along with Health Public Information Services for their work. Thank you all. Thank you, Chair Heintzman. It's been a pleasure to work with you. And with that, we stand adjourned.